This is the place. This is the place where we strive to know each other. This is the place where we bring our hard questions. This is the place where we seek consolation and comfort in difficult times. This is the place where we laugh and sing and carry each other through. You, in all your glorious complexity, are welcome here in this place. You know, we always welcome our tech team at the start of every service, and today it's a very special thank you because I'm delighted to introduce our new, first time ever, Technical Arts Director. We received many applications, and when we interviewed Chris Paul, we knew we had our person. So I know a lot of folks know Chris. Chris does video productions professionally and has many years of service supporting the technology of worship at First Unitarian. So he'll be managing the technology end of our services and helping out with content creation. And he starts the job this coming week. So welcome, Chris. Chris is the DJ today, appropriately. And of course, thank you to the rest of the tech team for all that you do. We couldn't do it without you. And something very big is here. It's here today. Connections Week starts today at 1 p.m. and runs every day through the next Sunday, September 6th. So each day this week, you can register for Zoom sessions about the 30 different church groups that are participating and find out how you can get involved. So like, for example, today you can learn all about covenant groups. You can learn about our wisdom circle. You can learn about the Leadership Succession Committee, Animal Advocates, and the UU People of Color group. It's not too late to register. So after the service, go to our home website, uuabq.org, and click on the Connections Week banner, which is right at the top of the home page. And this will take you to the registration page where you can register for as many sessions as you want to attend. So join us, join this vibrant community that's doing so many wonderful things. Connection is so important right now. In that spirit, come, let us worship together.
Good morning. Good morning. We light our chalice today, and if you have a chalice at home to light, please join me with a short song. It's a long-held tradition in the Unitarian world, Rise Up, O Flame. I'll sing it once as I light the chalice, and then I'll invite you to sing it with me. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Will you join me in singing? Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O joy, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy. Rise up, O flame, by thy light glowing, show to us beauty, vision, and joy.
Hi, we're the staff team at First Unitarian.
Will you join us in the children's affirmation?
We are Unitarian.
Universalists.
We are people of faith.
With open minds.
Loving hearts.
And helping hands.
Today, Bob and I are going to answer questions from grown-ups in the congregation, and I thought it would be fun to also answer questions from the puppets. What do you say, Bob?
Sounds like fun.
All right. The puppets are sitting right here, and I have their questions in this bowl. So let's pick one. The first one first question is from Sheldon. Oh, hi, Sheldon. His question is, I live on the earth. Why are people so mean they mess it up? Well, Sheldon, I think most people aren't mean on purpose, but more like thoughtless. When people litter or dump oil on the ground or something like that, they're probably not thinking about the damage they do to snails and other animals.
Yeah, I mean, there's earth, like the dirt that you live in, Sheldon. And then there's earth, the whole planet that all of us live on. And we grown-ups should do a much better job of not making so much carbon and other pollution. And besides not littering, kids can help by recycling and not wasting things. Wasting things is really hard on the earth and the animals who live on it, like you, Sheldon.
Okay, next question. This one is Rebecca's question. Hi, Rebecca. She says, do you believe in the rabbit in the moon? Oh, and she has included this picture. Well, Rebecca, since you pointed it out to me, I can see how, if you know what to look for, you can see a rabbit in the moon, just like it shows in this picture. But as far as believing there's a mama rabbit in the moon who created the whole world, well, it doesn't really matter what Bob or I believe. As Unitarian Universalists, we believe that everybody is free to figure out for themselves what seems true to them, as long as it's respectful to others. So if mama rabbit on the moon is really important and meaningful to you, then I think that's wonderful. Does that make sense, Rebecca?
Yeah, I know this seems really complicated, Rebecca, but I'm really glad that you're so certain about believing in mama rabbit in the moon. I mean, lots of grownups would like to be that certain in their beliefs.
True. Okay, next question. This one is from Lucia. Hi, Lucia. Lucia wants to know, can we go back to church now? Lucia, do you have a hazmat suit? No? How about an inflatable unicorn suit, maybe with a built-in air filter? No? Well, then it's probably not a good idea to hang out indoors with a crowd. But when we move our chalice back into the sanctuary and we do some parts of Zoom worship from there, you could come with me sometimes. Oh, Zoom. what is it? When? Well, we have to make the sanctuary a little bit more like a studio first. We need the right lights and equipment, so I'll get back to you soon, okay? Can you have a corn suit? A what? Oh, I was joking about the unicorn thing. Okay. Let's see. Oh, hi, Carl. Is the refrigerator still there?
Oh, yes, Carl, but I'm pretty sure it's still empty from your last visit.
Okay, oops, these are stuck together. Here we go. Okay, this question is from Olivia. Hi, Olivia. Olivia wants to know, what year was Frances Ellen Watkins Harper born? Wow, Olivia, you must have heard my sermon last week about the history of voting rights. I said we should all know Frances Ellen Watkins Harper's story. Yes, I did. She was a very important person, an African-American author and leader in the 1800s who worked for abolition and for voting rights. So she must have been born before 1835 or so, but I don't know the exact year.
Me neither. I think Olivia has us stumped.
I'm afraid so. Look at her triumphant wing flapping. Well, we're just about out of time for this part. Oh, Carl, are you disappointed that we didn't get to your question? Carl, I have a feeling that whatever your question was, my answer is minor deity. All right, let's say goodbye, everybody. Goodbye, Carl. Goodbye, Olivia. Goodbye, Lucia. Goodbye, Rebecca.
We've already been stumped once, Angela, but I'm sure the adults will ask us easier questions than what Olivia did.
I guess we'll see.
Hello, I'm Lara Magnuson, Director of Membership and Communications. This morning, we have the pleasure of welcoming 41 new members to our beloved community. At joining ceremonies over the last 9 months, these friends have made their membership official. They've added their names to the more than 5,000 others who have signed our membership book since the 1950s. Now, if that's something you've been considering, we'd love for you to join too. Together, we create membership that is meaningful by nurturing the life of the spirit, caring for one another and the world, and investing in our shared mission through service and financial support. Now, we'd like to recognize any of the new members attending the service today. So if you're a new member here today, give us a wave.
Greetings, new members. We welcome you as full members in this congregation that celebrates diversity, creativity, and care, and where, as we say, it is more important to love alike than think alike. Welcome to this community where we share ancient wisdom and new insights as we grow and deepen in our lives. Now, if we were doing this in our sanctuary, we'd have the congregation recite a litany to the new members, and the new members would recite a litany back. In lieu of that, we're going to have three current members of First Unitarian speak the litany on behalf of the whole congregation, and then have three new members speak on behalf of the more than 40 members who've joined in the past few months. You're invited to recite the litany on the screen along with them.
With joy, we welcome you as members of this congregation. Our covenant is the love that swells the heart and opens the mind.
Our practice is the tolerance that shows the larger truth. Our hope is for growth as we seek depth in our lives.
Our service is to all humanity. Our community enriches our lives.
With joy, we accept the gifts and responsibilities of membership and the covenant of love, respect, and service.
May our connection be strengthened day by day and year by year.
Together, we journey forward, creating our history as a community of those who cherish an open space for the growth of the free spirit and the free mind.
What a joy it is today to see all of your faces and welcome you to our congregation. May our time together be a blessing in our lives, and together may we be of service to goodness and compassion in the world. Welcome, new members.
Will you please join me in singing a short song of gratitude and welcome for all of us gathered here together today? Oh, we give thanks.
This time we share with love.
Let's prepare our bodies and minds for meditation and prayer. Let's pause the chat box for a moment while we do, and we can continue with all those words of welcome after the prayer and meditation. And let's breathe and settle and notice any sounds around you. Notice if you still have a smile on your face from seeing the faces and names of our new members. Breathe and just be in this moment with all that it has and all that it holds. You can close your eyes if you'd like, or leave them open. You can bow your head, surrendering to what is beyond your control, which includes both difficult things and grace. Or you can tip your face toward the sky, letting it all wash over you. The beautiful things, the happy things, the things you carry, the too muchness of it all sometimes, the love that surrounds you in this hour, letting it just flow over you. Or you can sit in a simple meditative pose, your rhythm of breath in and breath out, carrying you through the silence. As we enter into silence, I offer you these words of Anna Spierczynska. Whether in daytime or nighttime, I always carry inside a light. In the middle of noise and turmoil, I carry silence. Always, I carry a light and silence. We continue in silence. I'm going to open the chat box back up now, and I invite you to share the joys and concerns that you have on your hearts this morning. You can start with the joys and then concerns, typing them into the chat box where we can all see them and hold them with you. And if you're not able to enter a text into the chat box this morning, you can still let us know what's on your mind and what's in your prayers by emailing the care team at caring@uuabq.org. We would love to hear from you. Let's share our joys and concerns.
All these we lift up. And we lift up Nina Stevenson and Erica Johnson Jimenez, who are both mourning unexpected deaths of cousins. We lift up students and faculty at the University of Delaware, where an arsonist set fire to the Jewish Center this week, a home away from home for Jewish students there. All these joys and concerns, all these loved ones, we lift up to the great powers of healing and renewal known by many names. We especially lift up all who have taken to the streets once more this week in Kenosha and beyond, in continued calls for transformation and justice. We pray for peace. We affirm with the UU Congregation of Kenosha, located right next to a business that burned, we affirm with them that we would rather lose 100 buildings than one more life to police violence. So the peace we pray for is not just the peace of means. It is not only for peaceful protests, but it is also ultimately the peace that is the sacred goal, a peace that's not merely the absence of violence, but is the presence of justice, wholeness, and human thriving and equity. And we pray for the courage to be a part of that, the courage to make it so. Our prayers are with all who are recovering from storms, and with all of us trying to get by, to be safe, to get well right now. We pray that this world's beauty and its abundance of loving hearts and resilience, its capacity for healing and for meaningful lives, its deep currents of love and justice, which transcend the whims of humans, are made plain. We rededicate ourselves to gratitude, to being present, patient, and persistent, to being faithful and steady, come what may. Amen. And peace be with you.
And also with you. So as we get ready to see if anyone has a question that will stump Angela and Bob in the question box section, let's just sing a short song that's got some really fundamental questions in it. Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? As you have heard, we have something a little different today. Instead of our usual sermon time with a prepared sermon, we have been receiving your questions for the last few weeks, and Bob and I have divided them up and put them in a bowl, each of us, and we're going to take turns drawing questions out and asking them to each other and then having a conversation about our thoughts on those. We're going to speak completely off the cuff. We have not prepared any notes for this, so we'll see what happens. Bob, would you like to go first?
All right, Angela, got a question here. Let's see. All right. Oh, it's a long one. All right. Dear ministers, I just finished reading a biography of Dorothy L. Sayers, wherein she makes mention of a system of romantic theology known as the affirmative way. So it's defined as the approach to God, which affirms that something can be discerned as his being in nature, God's being in nature, God is not gendered, God's being in nature through reason and from worldly experience. So from reason, knowing God through reason and from worldly experience. I wasn't familiar with this approach and wonder, one, whether it fits within a UU perspective, or two, since it seems to presume the existence of God, which is a bit too dogmatic for most UUs. So does this idea of reason and worldly perspective fit within a UU perspective, or, and is it too dogmatic for UUs? What say you?
So, hey, everybody, don't worry, because if they were all that big, they just really wouldn't fit into these bowls. So we do have some shorter questions. This question is, it makes me laugh because it reminds me of when I was in graduate school, especially the early days of graduate school, and I would be in a class and somebody would ask a question that contained so much information in the question that no one else knew, that the whole class would look like deer in the headlights. So never mind what the actual question is. So it is a big question. I am not familiar with this theological writer either. So let me say that. And I'm gonna take the second part first, which I think was whether this theology's insistence on God is dogmatic and would not fit in a UU framework. You know, for some people, the idea of God, for some UUs, resonates quite deeply. And it seems in our congregation, when we do an informal poll, about 1/3 of people feel that way, that there's something they would call God. And so I think for those UUs, perhaps it would fit. What stands out more in the question for me is the idea that we can discern something about the divine or the ultimate in nature, which is a concept that has very old, very deep roots in Unitarianism and Universalism. You especially think of the writers in the 1800s, like Ralph Waldo Emerson. And then more recently, people UUs turn to for religious inspiration, who may not even themselves be UUs, but people like Mary Oliver, poetry like that, that connects us with nature. So I think there's a lot there that UUs could potentially connect with.
Yeah, and I'll just add, I think we'd be remiss if we left out the Wesleyan or Methodist quadrilateral, which is that there are four ways of sort of encountering the divine, and the sources are scripture or sacred texts, like Mary Oliver, tradition, which is our practices and history, reason, our minds, and then experience, which is the intuitive experience of God. You want to ask a question, Angela?
I do. And from your answer, Bob, I'm remembering that you have been in graduate school more recently than I have. Okay, I'm going to pick a really small one. Dear ministers, what is our common spiritual practice?
Oh, I love this question so much. That is such a good question. Because we're Unitarian Universalists and we have a wide number of ways of encountering or giving voice to our spiritual longings. If I would have to pick one though, I think it is our corporate worship, our group worship, what we do here. So that no matter what else, all the other ways, like if you look across this First Unitarian, we have Buddhist sitting groups, we have a beautiful and active pagan coven. You know, there are folks just doing service. There's so many different ways of that, you know, communities within this larger community that are expressing their spirituality, but it is when we all come together for this moment right now that is truly our common practice, I think. What do you think, Angela? It's kind of I hate to like say it's just one thing.
I was also going to say, you know, Sunday services together are the core spiritual practice of this collective community, for sure. You want to ask the next one?
Sure. All right, let's see. Digging around, here we go. All right, thank you. Dear ministers, I've heard Kamala Harris talk about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's concept of beloved community. How does that concept connect with our sense of that concept?
Well, without knowing Kamala Harris's exact thoughts, my guess is that it connects very deeply. when Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. talked about beloved community, he was talking about something like the peace I described in the prayer a few minutes ago, which is a biblical concept that goes way back. It's something that Unitarian Universalists have carried forward from our Protestant heritage, from our Protestant roots. And it has to do with equity, wholeness, with human thriving, with, you know, the absence of huge imbalances in resources, and just a community where there is abundance, abundance and the opportunity to thrive for all. Would you add anything to that, Bob?
Not much, maybe just it's a place where truly everyone is valued. So I think if we truly lived into our principles, then we would have a beloved community. Great thing to work for.
Yeah. Okay. Dear ministers, if one holds that thinking, meaning that long, hard, deep look at reality, is essential to the forward movement of evolution, then in a world saturated with bits of information, how do we reclaim loving at the heart of thinking and thinking as a spiritual act?
Holy cow, that's a big question. I think thinking can be a distraction. As someone who does a lot of Buddhist practice, thinking can be a distraction from being. And I think when we are truly being and feeling whole, it's easier to access our genuine love. Angela, you want to take a crack at this one? I'm struggling.
Isn't it nice that there's two of us, Bob? Last time I had to do this all by myself. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of distracting bits of information, right? And, you know, it makes me think of something Kathy McGill said when she was our guest preacher last month. She was talking about a little, like a rhyme that kids sang where she grew up in Oklahoma. And it was, somebody would say, you know, look over there. And then if you fell for it, they would say, look, look, made you look, stole your mama's pocketbook. And she was talking about the way, you know, there's just so much distraction and intentional distraction to distract us from what is important right now. And, you know, I think to reclaim thinking as a spiritual act, we have to carve out time when we are intentionally contemplative in the way of getting quiet in the self, and we're not letting ourselves be bombarded for a bit with all of that information, and we can get back in touch with what guides us, you know, what leads us in our lives, what is our sort of North Star.
That's really good. You know, and I just remembered something that we were told in seminary when we first started. We were told not to think our way into new ways of acting, but rather to act our way into new ways of thinking. So ooh. Walking precedes talking. Mm. I guess I'm up, huh? All right, let's see what we got here. Dear ministers, I'm gonna bridge this question. Can you suggest ways that we as individuals and a congregation can support the project of restoring democracy?
Well, yes, and we should, because that is one of our seven principles as Unitarian Universalists, to promote democracy and support it within our congregations and beyond. So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is this election that's coming up, right? And there's the people, and then there's the processes. And we know that we right now have seen a wave of voter suppression unlike anything since the first half of the 20th century. And so working to get out the vote is a really important thing that we can do. And then you know, exercising our right to speak out and protest voter suppression and to hold elected officials accountable for that kind of thing is another really important thing to do. So much of it happens behind the scenes when voter rolls are purged or districts are redrawn, and it can be hard to see it behind the curtain. But by paying attention to the words and the stories that are being put out by activists who are watching for that kind of thing and being motivated to get involved, we can make a difference on that. And we can keep working to expand voting rights as well. Like, for example, right now, it just varies state by state. People convicted of a certain crime in some states can never vote again. In some states can vote after they've done their time. And in some states can vote in prison. Knowing what we know about our carceral states and the way we lock people up and who gets locked up, we want to rethink that kind of thing.
And if you're moved to action, if there are people in this congregation who are doing great work around voter registration and get out the vote, and also there is this movement, UU the Vote.
Yes.
People can jump in on. Just Google UU the Vote, and you'll see there's our denomination is really leading the way on this. So there's great things happening.
Absolutely. I'm glad you pointed that out, UU the Vote. All right. This one we got more than one version of, so it might come up again. Dear ministers, the inherent worth and dignity of every person is our first principle. How do we as UUs live up to that principle when faced with racists, white supremacists, sexist, homophobic, etc., and this person writes, and a person such as Trump?
This is a hard question for us to live with right now because it's such a difficult time. Thank you for spotlighting me. Two thoughts. One is the inherent worth and dignity of every individual is fundamental. And our rules for encountering individuals are different when we're talking about encountering people with power. So when we're talking about people who make decisions about immigration or our carceral state or the environment, and they do it in a cynical, manipulative way, then we can speak very harshly to them, and as opposed to how we would talk to our neighbors, for example, or people who share our powerlessness, which is really my second point. Parker Palmer, in Healing the Heart of Democracy, he writes about trying to understand that everyone's grievance, regardless of who they blame, everyone's grievance has its roots in a broken heart. And if we can get to the root of what people's brokenheartedness is, we can undo a lot of the difference. I had an experience where I was counter demonstrating with Showing for Racial Justice against the 3% militia in Buffalo. And we ended up just talking, because there were 20 of us on each side freezing ourselves in January in the city square in Buffalo. When I talked to these folks, I kept asking them about their personal stories, and I kept hearing the same complaints that we have about being taken advantage of by corporations, you know, not having access to good healthcare, you know, feeling powerless. It helped allow me to see their humanity, even while I totally disagreed with the conclusions they were drawing about how to get there. So, Angela, you want to add something to this?
Yeah, I've thought about this one a lot too. Rachel Naomi Remen tells a story about a rabbi who is holding his baby daughter during a service he's leading, and she keeps reaching up and grabbing his nose, and the congregation's laughing, and then she grabs his glasses and pulls them off, and the congregation laughs, and he puts them back on, and he's trying to continue to lead the service, and then she reaches up and she pulls his glasses off and she throws them on the ground, and everybody laughs, and he picks them up and looks at her affectionately, and then turns to the congregation and says, "And at what point will she become unforgivable?" You know, and I just think about that, like, it's like you're saying, Bob, like, there's still a person in everyone, And at what point do they become, in our minds, just not a person anymore? So when I think of inherent worth and dignity, I don't think that means that we have to be nice in the sense of, you know, letting people get away with bad or horrible behavior. It doesn't mean treating them to luxury, but it does mean we don't treat anybody like they're just garbage, because, or just not human, because that's not the kind of world we're trying to make, right? And if we're trying to make a world that has that beloved community, then it matters how we go about building it. If we're just repeating patterns of discarding people that have been here all along, we're not building it.
It's a lovely spirit. All right, I got one for you, Angela. Dear ministers, how do you maintain your own trust and faith in our future in the presence of so much injustice, division, death, and despair? Kind of related to the last one, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. How do we maintain our own trust and faith in the future and faith in the face of so much despair? I would say that it's okay for all of us if sometimes our positive trust in the future, like our belief that everything will be okay, if that wavers, it's all right. It's okay. But the thing is that living as though there's no hope for the future, and therefore it doesn't matter at all what we do, is just no way to live. Right? I mean, that way lies sadness and harm, and it throws away the life that we're living right now, which contains so much good and so much beauty. Much better than to hold what's good and to try to spin it forward and work it forward and build more of it and just see what we can accomplish. I mean, that way is the good path, right? Love, community, solidarity, hope, meaning, all of it lies that way.
Yeah, these are hard times, undeniably, hardest that I've seen. I had a terrible day on Friday where I injured myself and had an emergency trip to the vet. You can see my dog is wearing a cone over there and has been miserable. I was struggling, I'll be honest, because it was a moment where some minor personal setbacks were, I felt how deeply they were compounded by the time we were in. And I forced myself to do a gratitude practice, as I sat on the couch with my dog and I forced myself to think of the things I had. And I resisted it so much all the way. But with everything I named, with everything I could point to and say, like, I am so rich in the deepest sense of the words, like, it helped me to understand, it helped me to get through that moment. And the other thing I'll say is action is the antidote to despair. So pick up a pen, write an email, you know, call a friend and comfort them. Those are the things that make us feel better and help us carry forward. How many more do we have, Angela? You think we have some time for?
We're definitely not going to get to all of these questions. We still have a lot, and we only have a few minutes left. But one thing I love about this kind of service is we keep these questions, and Bob and I will take them into consideration as we're planning and writing future sermons and choosing readings and all that kind of thing. We love to know what's been on your mind. Okay, so let's see what this one is. Okay, this one is very, very long, so we're gonna work this one into a sermon soon. Grab a different one. There we go. Yeah. Bite size, but important. Dear ministers, what is our community doing to implement the eighth principle? And Bob, I think you should start by saying something about what the eighth principle is.
Sure thing. So the eighth principle, we have seven principles, and there is a work happening within the denomination to add an eighth principle that would explicitly call us to work on behalf, as a denomination, to work on behalf of the oppressed, specifically people of color, but all the oppressed too. So adding a principle was a big deal, and it's working its way through the denominational processes. It'll take years, and that's appropriate because this shouldn't be rushed. Individual churches are also just adopting it informally too. I think we're already doing this work profoundly within this congregation. I think many things that we do that are service related or our White Fragility book groups are speaking, you know, are working to create racial justice. And as I've spoken about before, and we'll be speaking about more in a couple of weeks at the end of September, you know, we're gonna work together to more deeply ingrain anti-racism and anti-oppression in every element of the life of this congregation. So the eighth principle, the thing about, I wouldn't want to adopt the eighth principle without actually first doing the work of truly living into the eighth principle. So if we just voted on it and said we're doing the eighth principle now, we'd be doing lip service. If we really dig in and have some healthy discomfort and move forward, then adopt the eighth principle, then that's an act that has integrity. So Angela, you want to add anything?
Well, that sounds kind of like acting your way into a new way of thinking in a way, although I know there's a lot of thinking that, you know, goes along with those actions. And Bob and I have talked a lot about this lately, and this is clearly going to be, even more than before, a really important focus for our congregation's mission-oriented activity inside our congregation and beyond it. You want to ask one more?
I know, I'm having so much fun. I have to say, I am so impressed by the nature of the questions, and it just reflects back to me what I see all the time, is that so many people in this congregation are just really doing deep spiritual and theological work. And I think that contributes, that's part of why this is such a vibrant congregation on so many levels, is because people are taking the act of being Unitarian Universalist seriously. Okay, I'm not gonna do that one.
We get to pick and choose for the final.
Right. I'm sorry to be that way. This one's really good, actually. Dear ministers, in these trying times, how do we hold on to humor and joy, especially in our spiritual quest? Is humor appropriate in our spiritual quest?
Oh, humor is 100% appropriate in our spiritual quest. It is necessary to our spiritual quests. I mean, we're not going to go very far. We're not going to be able to sustain anything very long if we cannot laugh and play. I mean, that when we talk about a beloved community, a place with human thriving, it certainly contains that. And so that is something else that we need along the way as well. And I think, you know, giving ourselves permission to laugh and to be complex, you know, just because we're laughing and playing doesn't mean we're not also grieving and striving for transformation. And, you know, I think of when I lead memorial services, and we all see this when we go to memorial services, it's really common that there's a lot of laughter because there's just a lot to hold. And so just as a human life is rich and complex, so is the all of it that we're in, that we reflect. Would you add anything else, Bob?
You know who invented sarcasm? I did. I was talking to a really smart member of this congregation the other day, and we were talking about the spiritual qualities that will support us in anti-racism work. And we were talking about holy rage, holy anger, and how that can motivate us and move us forward. But we felt like there had to be an antidote to that. And this person said, well, humor. We have to have humor to balance out our rage in order to survive. So I thought that was a really, really wise thing to say.
Mm-hmm. What wonderful questions, everybody. Thank you. I think we probably got to something like 10 of them, which means there's lots left. And if you would like to still send us a question, you certainly can. You can send it to specials@uuabq.org. So that's specials, plural, at uuabq.org. And even though we don't have another question and answer sermon coming up anytime soon, we'll use those. We'll just file them away and we'll keep them in mind as we plan services. Okay, back to you, Bob.
All right. Well, thank you for that. That was super fun. So let's take up the offering. So as we prepare to take up the offering, I want to remind folks that our Change for the Future recipient for this quarter is still Roadrunner Food Bank, our longtime partner. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat. The chat. And if you prefer not to give online, you can just simply send a check to the church. So we will now take up an offering for the work of this church and the work of this church in the community. What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, and thank you on behalf of Roadrunner Food Bank. Our discussion, so as we prepare to end the service and we move into the breakout rooms, I invite you to consider, what are your favorite questions? What are the questions that you go back to all the time as you work through your spiritual life? So what are your favorite spiritual questions? And as we extinguish our chalice, let us remember that this is the place, a place that is more than a building. We carry this place in our minds, in our hands, and in our hearts. So go in peace, gentle people, and practice radical love, holding this place within you.
Do and the spirit says do. You got to do and the spirit says do. Do 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 and the spirit says do. Do 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 do
got to do when the Spirit says do. You've got to do when the Spirit says do. When the Spirit says do, you've got to do. Oh Lord, you got to do when the Spirit says do. 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 Spirit says do.
Spirit says groove.
You gotta be grooving, you gotta be grooving.
You got to groove when the Spirit says groove.
You have got to groove.
When the Spirit says groove, you've got to groove, oh Lord. You've got to groove
got
when
to
the
groove.
Spirit says groove,
says groove.
Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove. Spirit says groove.
Before I walk and now I do the 1-2 step. I heard the Spirit and it said the groove, yeah. That's why I do my own shuffle, tapping feet, clapping hands. If you could talk, you could sing. If you could walk, you could dance. Spirit told me bust the track with the vocals, and I come around your city rocking with the locals. Fading out, got my eyes closed. I think the Lord talking to me, gotta get up all in my zone. Candle gazing after doing kundalini. I wrote it in my journal trying to find the true meaning. It ain't gonna happen overnight, I really ain't stressing. I'ma get the blessing. I don't need Google directions, I just follow Spirit. I think I start to hear it. The elders talk about alignment, I just start to get near it. Walk along the path, with or without a clue. When the Spirit says do, I make it do what it do.
You got
come
to
on.
Do when the Spirit says do.
Oh yeah.
You got to do.
Y'all know what it's like when the Spirit says do.
Do.
I mean, you just gotta do what it do.
Says
I know
do.
Right now, with some Spirit talking to you inside, and it's telling you to do something. And whatever that is, go with it, alright?
Spirit says do.
Spirit says
do.
Spirit says do, and you know what, I'ma do what I do. You go ahead and do what you do, and that's how we gon' do what we do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, baby.
Spirit says
do. Oh yeah.